Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2012. Lecture 19, delivered on April 3, 2012. The title of this lecture is Capital Budgeting.
Today, capital budgeting. This is again, in terms of the technical part, something that calculators do like a boss, that used to be a pain in the dare rear back in my time, because you would have to fish and search back and forth, do what's called iteration, to find an answer. And now these stupid calculators do it like, oh, that was easy. No, it wasn't. Oh, for you it was. You're stupid. You know, the calculator can do these incredible things that took us literally hours to do. It can do it in a split second. I comfort myself by the fact that this calculator will never know what a White Castle tastes like. So there. I'm teaching this. This is old school, and to this day, most big corporations and smaller, older corporations use this method for deciding whether a project is worth taking on or not. That's what this is all about. The decision as to whether or not to take on a project is an up or down. There is no nuance to it, either yes or no. You either have a positive number come out at the end of this exercise or a negative number come out. Well, let's put it this way. You have a non-negative number come out or a negative number come out. Doesn't matter how big it is, negative or positive. It is merely the sign that determines it. So you could have some brilliant, brilliant plan idea, and if it comes out negative $1.12, you say no. That's it. Game over. This is one of the tensions that is that exists in businesses, larger businesses, when you have stakeholders inside of the company, marketing department, other groups. They have a wonderful plan, a wonderful idea. Here's the project, here are the numbers, and then the finance people set their teeth to it and they find it's not going to fly. We came up with a negative net present value. Oh, well, what does that mean? It means no. Well, we'll see about that. No, it means no. I don't care how wonderful this is and how much this would change the future and all that kind of stuff. The answer is no. Unfortunately, it's a little more complicated than that. In smaller companies and in companies that are in highly dynamic, uncertain industries, this method has to be qualified, and if you took an advanced course 349, you would find out that in fact, no, in the traditional sense, might not be the right answer. But that's only the case in very young, high-powered companies, volatile, unpredictable risks facing them in the future. But for what I'm showing you here, it is still the rule in many companies, older, more established corporations, which most of you will be in. Here's the deal. When you start, and we usually start with kind of a simplified set of assumptions, which aren't too bad. We assume the project starts out with a block of costs. We have to spend money in order to generate money in the future. So we have an estimate. This is how much it's going to cost us to get that positive cash flow started. Okay, we are going to do this, and we spend this money. Let's say it's $400,000. Okay, we're going to spend $400,000. This is our gateway to a positive cash flow down the road. But whatever it is that we're going to get down the road, it's going to be an estimate, an expectation. This is where you can't imagine the sky's the limit. It'll sell like hotcakes. You have to be as conservative as hell. Okay, these are the realistic scenario. This is the realistic expected value, future expected cash flows for each year. Now let's say that over the years that are going to come, at year zero you're going to spend this $400,000 right here. Now, after that, you're going to start to generate revenue. And we'll do a simple model here, something that's really small. In the first year, you'll have $100,000, and we'll say it all comes in at the end of the year. You can get more fancier. It really doesn't change a whole lot. In the second year, you're going to get $250,000 in. In the third year, the project is going to begin to tail off, and you're going to get $75,000 in the drawer. And then it's over, there's no salvage value. Now, if there's a salvage value, again, just tack it on to the last year. Don't let me fool you or confuse you with that. This one doesn't have any salvage value. We're going to make it easy. It boils down to what is called a net present value. Is the present value of this positive expected future cash flow enough to overcome the negative now value of getting that cash flow to happen? And we do this by, you simply take the present value of each of these lump sums, and then you add that to the negative at the beginning, and you see if you come up with a positive or a negative number. Now, we'll need a discount rate, and I'll pull one out of the air here. Usually, you'd use CAPM, as I said. But let's say that we're going to discount the cash flows here at 10%. The discount rate we'll use for calculating present values. Now, you could do this the way I just said. Take each one as a present value of a lump sum, bring them back to the present. But there is an easier way your calculator can do it. So I want you to turn on your calculators now. And I want you to hit Apps, Finance, and then, in this case, I want you to go down to number 7. You can actually just hit the number 7, or you can scroll down and hit enter on 7. But you're going to get NPV. What that will do is return you to the main screen with that NPV function on the screen. You'll see NPV. And you'll see, and I gotta get my glasses on here. It's not like I actually really need reading glasses. You know, that's just for old people. I do them just to look good. You're going to have an NPV and an open parenthesis. Now, the way you sequence the keying in of this is you're going to put in the interest rate as just a 10. Again, with the calculator, normally in any kind of real math, you use the decimal. That's the thing that's actually there. But in these finance apps, you just key in the percentage. It's a 10%, so you key in a 10. Then you key in the comma. You see the comma there? A comma looks kind of weird on a TI-83. Why would you want a comma as a main key? Because it is so important. And then you're going to key in negative $400,000. Just key in negative $400,000. And then you're going to put a comma, and then you're going to open braces. And you're going to put sequentially, you're going to put in the positive cash flows. 100,000, oh, comma, you're going to key in 100,000, comma, 250,000, comma, 75,000, then you're going to close the braces and then close the parentheses.
I hope to God I gave you that in the right order.
And if you do that,
and allow me to do it too, to make, as I said, to make sure that I'm remembering this correctly. I do this so much and then I forget sometimes.
Huh, I got it. You come up with an answer. Did you get negative $46,130.73? Is that what you got? Good. Reject the project. That's how you say it. You reject the project. Doesn't matter what negative it is. It's a negative. You reject. That's the end of it. Forget that project. Move on. Forget it. Okay? That's all there is to NPV. It is a simple, straightforward way to compare the cost now to the payoff later, the expected payoff. And again, you have, in the real world, you're going to have to be really honest with yourself about expectations of future expected cash flows. You're not going to be able to pull the discount rate out of your ass. You're going to have to do CAPM and do it seriously. But if you do everything the right way, the number comes out and it determines up or down. That's why you have to be so solid in these things like knowing, getting the expectations good, getting the discount rate appropriate. Because once you've said yes or no, that's when the crap storm happens and there's going to be, wait, we worked really hard getting this whole project proposal together and all you say is no because you got a negative number. That's right, no. Now kiss my ass, go home. That's why you have to be so sure of yourself when you get this, when you do this part up here. And this is true in any part of business. The best way to protect yourself is to get really strong when people attack. Well, how did you get this number? I did it the right way up here. Okay, now I'm going to show you a couple. Now I don't want to get too complicated. This NPV function on your calculator is really great. It saves you a lot of time, and it's got all kinds of very cool little tricks in it too. Let me show you one here. Let's try one. We're going to spend. Okay, I'm going to give you a chance to spend $600. Okay, now you're going to spend $600 now. Now let's say that we have a cash flow stream that will come out of this of $50, $70 in year, $50 in year one, $70 in year two. In years three, four, and five, you get $100. And then in years six and seven, you get $20. $200. Okay? And then in year seven, you get another, just a little punch of $80. Now there's two ways, there's three ways. If you want to be a masochist about it, you can just pound each of those in, find the present value of $50 one year out, plus the present value of $70 a year, 2 years out, etc. You can see that with a long cash flow tail on it, you got a lot of work to do and there's more potential to make a mistake along the way. Now the other way you can do it, there are two ways you can use the NPV to do it. There's the straight up way where you go apps finance and then you just choose number 7 again, NPV,
And you'll come back with the NPV. And let's say that this time, let's do a discount rate of 8.5%, okay? So up on your main screen comes NPV, open parenthesis. I push in the 8.5, comma, negative 600, comma, and then I open up the braces. Don't forget the comma and then those braces. And then you got $50, comma, $70, comma, $100, comma, $100, comma, $100, comma, $200, comma, $80. Close the braces, close the parentheses. And if you punch that in, let me make sure I get it as well as you. Open the braces. 50, comma, 70, comma, 100, comma, 100, comma, 100, comma, 200, comma, 80. Close the braces. Close the parentheses. You get a net present value of negative $109. You would not, and almost negative 110, you would not say yes to this deal. It's not worth it to you. It's not worth it. That's the straight in way of doing it. The NPV has a trick in it. It's actually not all that well known, but there's a way to shorten it up in this. And I hope I'm going to do it right here. Put in NPV, do Apps Finance 7 to get your NPV up on the main screen. And like I said, I hope I've got this right. I remember it right. Put 8.5, comma, negative 600, comma, again, I think I've got it. 50, comma 70, comma 100, comma 200, comma 80. Close the braces, comma, open the braces, 1, comma 1, comma 3, comma 1, comma 1. Close the braces, close the parentheses. Look at what I did. I think this is right. That comma there between the two braces, I hope I'm right on that. Apps Finance 7, 8.5, comma, negative 600, comma, open the braces, 50, comma, 70, comma, 100, comma, 200, comma, 80, close the braces, comma, open the braces, 1, comma, 1, comma, 3, comma, 1, comma, 1, close the braces, close the parentheses. Well, spank me Jesus, it worked. Okay. You see what I did there? I told it how many times each entry in the first braces occurs in terms of years. 50 occurred once, 70 occurs once. 100 occurs for 3 years, then 200 occurs for 1 year, 80 occurs for 1 year. That's what the second set of braces are for. Where this would be in the real type of analysis would be where you've got this long period of stable cash inflow coming from a project, which is not an abnormal assumption. You could have this ramp up where your revenues rise for a couple of years and then they stabilize and they just ride for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years and then they drop back off again. This saves you, if you've got strings of the same amount of money, this little second trick here gives you a way to do that without pouring in each number over and over and over again. You don't have to do it. As you can see, I did that same problem, got the same answer, doing it with a straight up NPV. But if you know this trick, it allows you to
to shorten up the cycle. It's especially, again, useful if you've got like maybe 10 years, the same expected future cash flow is going to come in. And then for another 5 years, another expected future cash flow will be level. That's where this comes and makes it a lot easier to get the answer without as many keystrokes going in. Are they gone? Okay. Random people, especially those who look like they came from a trailer park, worry me because from what I've read of the shootings, they always shoot the ass of the professor first. So what's going to happen is if a gun comes out, I'm going to take this tie off like a boss and put it on you. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, it worries me. Oops, I forgot to kill my phone. Sorry about that. Anyway, well, that's life. Okay. Where the hell was I? Okay. Let me do a real quick one and then show you something here. Let's put in a project is going to cost you $500. And then it's going to bring in year one, $150. Year two, $300. Year three, $100. Now I'm going to do the NPV, and I'm going to do it with a couple of different interest rates. First, let's start with an interest rate of 5%. And this part of this, just so you can get the hang of doing this over and over again, apps finance NPV at 5%, pushing in $500, and then bringing out some good money, $150, $300, $100. Close the braces, close the parentheses, and you get a NPV of positive $1.36. We would accept the project at a discount rate of 5%. But let's go down, and just out of curiosity, just for the sake of curiosity, what would have happened at 4%? We would have the apps finance NPV, and we would put a 4 in, and then the comma, negative 500, comma, open the braces, 150, comma, 300, comma, 100, close the braces, close the parentheses. Oh, at 4%, it has a more positive NPV, $10.50. Well, now let's go over to 6% and see what happens. With the same thing, apps, finance, NPV, we would put in negative $500, and then your comma, whoops, I'm sorry, 6%, 6, comma, negative $500, comma, open the braces, and just put it in again, 150, comma, 300, comma, 100, close the braces, close the parentheses, and it comes up with a negative
$7.53.
The same cash flow is coming up with different net present values depending upon what discount rate I use. And if I notice as the discount rate rises, the NPV is going down. In other words, if I were to look at this on a set of axes where the vertical axis was the NPV and the horizontal axis was the discount rate that I had used for the project, going from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and going from values of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and down negative 1, negative 2, negative 3, negative 4, negative 5, negative 6, negative 7. Okay. Positive $5, negative $5, negative $10, positive $10. I can see that at a discount rate of 1%, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at 5%, at 4%, I should say, I had a $10, a little more than $10 was the net present value. At 5%, I had come down to a little more than a dollar. And at 6%, I had dropped all the way down to almost $8. Well, $7.50. About there. And as rough as my sketch is, you can see that the net present value function, as a function of the discount rate that I use, is a decreasing function. Looks like that. So as my discount rate rises, I will always have the net present value fall. Now, if you're familiar back from your dark, dark days of mathematics, and I'm sure you remember everything from that time period, we would call this place where the NPV function, NPV as a function of the discount rate of the project, we would call that the x-intercept. But in a little more sophisticated terminology, you might remember that we called the place where a function hits the x-axis the root of the function, the root of the polynomial. That's a very special place in finance, but it's also a dangerous place. That place right there, notice that when I had a discount rate of 5%, I was almost at zero. The zero point for NPV had to have been just a little more than 5%. You see that there? At 5%, I'm just barely positive. By the time I get to 6%, I'm way negative. So that root there was a little above 5%. We have a name for that. It's called the internal rate of return, the IRR. Here's how it's used. Some companies set a hurdle rate on investments. They will say, we want no project that has a hurdle rate that is less than, let's say, 5%. What they're saying is that we want all of our projects to have an internal rate of return that's better than 5%. Or we want all of our projects to have a hurdle rate that is better than 4%, or something like that. In this way, we could actually find out what the internal rate of return of this project that I described above is, and see if it met some criteria. We would say, all right, suppose that this company has a hurdle rate on projects of 4.5%. Let's see what this project does.
turn on your calculator, hit apps, finance. Now this time go down to number 8, IRR. Now with internal rate of return, you are looking for the interest rate where the NPV is zero. So the IRR, you don't put in an interest rate. That's what it's going to tell you. So what you're going to do is, you got the IRR, open parenthesis, put in the negative cash flow, starting out 500. Now put comma, open the braces, and now you're going to whack in the three positive cash flows. 150, comma, what the hell were they? 300, comma, whoops, let me catch up with you here. 300, comma, 100. Close the braces, close the parenthesis, and the internal rate of return of the project comes out to be 5.15%. What that says is that any discount rate that I would use below 5.15% would give me a positive NPV. Let me say that, write that down. Any discount rate below this would give a positive NPV. So if the company said our hurdle rate is 4.5%, this is has an internal rate of return of 5.15%, I would accept. Again, let me say that again. It takes a little bit. Some people see it right away. I don't. I never did. I still have to say it to myself. What this is saying is that, okay, we found an internal rate of return of 5.15%. What that means is that any hurdle rate that would be given to me below 5.15%, I would say, yeah, this is a good project. Go for it. The company says, our hurdle rate on projects is 4.5%. I say, well, hell, the NPV of this is 5.15%. In other words, this is a go. This project's a go. Any project that would come in with an IRR that was above our hurdle is great. But if this company said our hurdle rate on new projects is 7.5%, I'd say, I'd throw this project out, man. This thing went negative at 5.15%. Again, if the company said, all right, our hurdle rate on new projects is 7.5%, I'd say throw this project out, man. This thing went south at 5.15%. Sorry about your luck. This one is a no-go. So in other words, again, if the hurdle rate is below your IRR that you find, you say yes to the project. Okay, let's try this. Throw that one out. I'm going to give you another project here, okay? I'm just going to say a number. We have a hurdle rate on projects of 11.4%. Here are the IRRs of some projects that have come to our attention. We've done the calculations. Project A, Project B, Project C, Project D. Project A has 8.5%, Project B, 5.9%, Project C, 11.8%, Project D, 10.9%. Talk to me. Which projects do I accept? Which project do I reject?
Okay, C goes south at 11.8%. Right? So, what do you say? Is that, do we say yes to it or no to it? We would say yes to it. A goes south at 8.5%. Yes or no? Up or down? Reject. It went south at 8.5%. It didn't even have a prayer of getting to the hurdle at 11.4. B, 5.9%. Yes or no? No, because, I mean, B went south at 5.9%. It was negative NPV. It hasn't got a prayer of getting to the hurdle at 11.9. And then D, again, no, because it turned negative NPV at 10.9%, so it won't meet the hurdle at 11.4% either. End of the story. Internal rate of return is a dangerous animal. There's a problem with the internal rate of return. It's used, and there's actually, it's used, it's important to use it. Companies oftentimes, they would rather have a set return on investment than think in terms of, well, let's use CAPM to figure out what the discount rate for this project is. They'd rather say, look, in our current configuration, our company wants to have projects that earn at least 13%. So you have a mentality that actually favors the IRR way instead of the NPV way. And then with that IRR, once they've given me a hurdle rate, well, then I just crank through the IRRs of the projects and find which ones are going to pass muster on the IRR method. If I get one that has an internal rate of return that is below the hurdle rate, I throw it out. If it's above the hurdle rate, I accept it. On the one hand, this avoids the complication of finding a discount rate to use in the NPV analysis via CAPM. On the other hand, on a purely business thinking standpoint, I always have to ask the question, well, why did you pick that hurdle rate? Where did that come from? Did that come out of your ass? Did God tell you that hurdle rate? You know, you could be rejecting some lower return projects just because you want the sky's the limit. Well, guess what? With those higher hurdle rates, you're bearing more risk. That's how it works. So if you give me a hurdle rate, yeah, we can do it, and it's actually fairly straightforward. But at the same time, you need to give me some reason why you want your hurdle rate there. Is that what your mom called and told you to use for your hurdle rate? Where'd you get it? You see, it's almost like a magic number kind of thing. And you need to justify it. Now, there's a technical problem with the internal rate of return. Just a small warning. It is in mathematical terms, it is a rather nasty little function. It turns out that if your cash flow switches sign more than once, the internal rate of return the calculator gives you will have no meaning. Because only when, and this is the way we do it in basic finance classes and even in a lot of real world situations, we assume there's money that goes out and then from there on positive cash flow comes in. Realistically though, there are times when money goes out, then money comes in, then you have to put a pile of money out to upgrade or to finish a project, then more money comes in. If that's the case, the internal rate of return actually has no meaning. The calculator will give you an answer, but it will have no meaning. Because what happens to the internal rate of return function is that it no longer has what we call the monotonically declining characteristic, like a straight line. It, in fact, suddenly turns into a veritable beast.
it swings back and forth. And depending upon where your calculator starts looking for the internal rate of return, it'll give you any one of the possible roots of the function. None of them have any meaning in business. None of them do. That's a warning. If your cash flow switches signs more than once, in other words, if it doesn't just go negative to positive and then stay positive, stay the heck away from IRR, because it gives you a spurious answer. The calculator will actually give you an answer. You'll think, oh, I'm cool. But it has no meaning, because the function itself turns into a multi-root polynomial. So there you are. IRR is used out there, and so is NPV. Truth be told, okay, there were some old methods that finally have died. Textbooks are still talking about a couple of real old-fashioned methods that I actually saw in my consulting years, companies still using them. Fortunately, we've got so many of you out there now that I don't know if there's any company still using it, at least not openly. There were some dog methods. There was one called the payback method, the payback period method. How many years did it take for the original investment to get paid back? So in other words, okay, we have a project that's going to cost us $800. For the first 2 years, it'll pay in $100. The second 2 years, $150. The third year, $300, etc. What you look for is the year that you recover the $800 you initially invested. That's the payback method. I will never ask you anything about it, because it is complete bunk. Obviously, they're not taking into account the time value of money. And second, they're just pulling, well, we want a payback period that's less than 4 years or less than 8 years. So they set this arbitrary criterion, and they wouldn't look at the discounted value, the time value of money in the future being worth less than it is now. And like I said, I actually saw some companies that still thought, a business people from real old school, who still thought in terms of payback period. Yeah, well, I had payback periods 8 years, and I usually like to take on projects that recover the initial investment within 4 or 5 years. I heard that. Bad thinking. It was out there. It's pretty much not around, although the textbooks still bring it up. The two dominant methods are the NPV method and the IRR method. If you have to make a choice, always go NPV. Always go NPV. It's more difficult because you have to go through CAPM, you have to find comps, find a beta that is reasonably close to the beta of the of what you're talking about in terms of a project. Yeah, but at the same time, you're not just arbitrarily picking a hurdle rate out of the air. And if the project goes negative to positive to negative to positive, you're still okay. NPV still works fine. Now, the other part of it is, always watch out for IRR, because you have normally in business, you assume that if a project has a positive NPV, then you've got to be able to find a way to finance it. You should be able to find financing for it. Sometimes, though, you actually have a project that, you have a couple of projects, they're both positive NPV. Now, theoretically, you should take both of the projects on. You should take on any project you find that's a positive NPV, provided it fits your business model and all that kind of stuff. Once in a great while, though, you'll have two projects that are mutually exclusive. In other words, you physically cannot do both projects. An example of this, okay, we've got two different projects. The only place we can really practically do these projects would be on this one plot of land. So we've got to choose which project we're going to do, because we can't do both projects on that plot of land. That would be mutually exclusive projects. Here's my rule, and it's a little different from the rule in the book. Is more complicated. It actually boils down to something simple. Remember how I said NPV, positive accept, negative reject? This is one where you look for which one has a higher NPV.
the actual number itself matters. Normally, the number itself doesn't matter. It's just a sign of the NPV. Positive up, negative down. In the case, though, where you have mutually exclusive projects, that's the only time where you actually look at the size of the NPV. They're both positive, and it's going to kill you to do it, but you just throw away the one. If they're mutually exclusive, you throw away the one that has a smaller NPV, a lower NPV, which is absolutely awful to do because you've got a project that could that would be a winner. If it's a positive NPV and you've done your analysis right, it's a winner. You got to give it up, though, if it has the lower of the two MPVs and the competing project really is competing on a mutually exclusive basis. Normally, you should never box yourself into a corner like that, where you have projects that are mutually exclusive. You should always see what you can possibly do to get around that mutual exclusivity of the projects that you're undertaking. Here's another temperament on that. If a project has a positive NPV, it should be financeable. The financing should be separate from the up or down. If it's a positive NPV, then hell, you should be able to find a way to make the project happen. And that's what we assume, is that as long as projects are positive NPV and not mutually exclusive, we'll take on the positive NPV projects. The truth of the matter is, two things are at hand here. One is, you can't just look at every possible project in the universe. You've got to restrict yourself. So you're going to find that there might be positive NPV projects out there that you should do. You're just not going to look at them because you don't have the time or the resources. The second thing is money. In the real world, a small company is not going to be able to get a project financed even if it's positive NPV. In many cases, I mean, I worked with companies. I was a small business consultant. I saw winners. Now, I saw a lot of con artists and scammers and liars, cheats, dog beaters, nose pickers, but I saw winners. And I saw winners that just could not get the money. I mean, I got NPVs that were just like, this can't be right. This NPV is huge. I know I'm supposed to just look at the sign, but look at that friggin' NPV. And I mean, there was no way. In some cases, I just finally put it to the company. Look, I got venture capitalists. They'll come in, they'll make your project a reality, and you'll be given a little piece of crap, and then you'll be sent on your way, and it won't be your project anymore. It's your call. You either make this massively positive NPV project go, and you don't participate, you don't be the winner, but the markets will benefit, consumer markets or whatever will benefit from it. Or you can just hold on, pretend that you're going to be able to find the money for this from some bank, some beneficent investment pool, or some public offering that will be on a firm underwriting basis. The reality is it ain't going to happen. So you're going to have a positive NPV project that will be a go. If you go away, it will never happen if you stay, even though it's positive NPV. That's the reality of it. And it was all over the board. I was called names that started with mother when I did that. And the truth of the matter is I got a hatred of the vultures, the venture capitalists. I just hate them to this day. Because they knew all they had to do was sit back and wait for the world to come to them. These companies that were, these guys had busted their asses for years. They had developed this with their blood, sweat, and tears. It was a winner. But they were never going to be able to finance it. And the venture capitalists, sooner or later, there was some son of a bitch like me who was going to call and say, they're ready to break. They'll take a 0.5% stake, the five of them will. You come in, you finance it, it's all yours. So this idealized thing where if it's positive NPV, then there's always going to be a way to finance it, bull crap. Not always. Last thing that I want to show you today. I just want to mention this. In Finance 349, Advanced Financial Theory,
Now, I don't ever like to say something like, oh, this is beyond you, you never understand this, but there's this stuff out here that's deep and important. I'm going to share with you what's going on in another part of the real world. Like I said, NPV analysis is still used. Big companies, any of you cats that go into a big company, they're going to do NPVs, IRRs. That's our meat and potatoes. That's why we teach it to you. That's why we focus on it in all of our courses. But when I get you to 349, I tell you a different story, a modified story. This was brought up by a rather famous investor fellow. I don't have a whole lot of use for him. He's a creep. But his name is Warren Buffett. And Buffett made a very important point. He overstated it. He said, NPV analysis, all that kind of stuff, it's dead. It's irrelevant anymore. And he said it almost in those stark terms. Well, it's not right. I mean, big companies, the kind that would stay away from a Warren Buffett, they'd use it all the time. But what he was talking about was the world of young upstart companies and the world of companies that are in some facing some kind of a major shift in the economics of their markets or in global markets in general. Sometimes a straight up NPV analysis can give you a negative number, but you go with the project anyway. Because essentially what you're doing is, even though it sucks, the cash flow, future expected cash flows come out to have a negative net present value compared to the cost of it. What you're doing is you're buying an option on the future. Now, there's a rule in options trading. It's an ancient rule. It is true. There is no exception. Every option is worth more alive than dead. So anytime you can keep an option alive, it's worth more to you than it would be dead. Let me give you the example of Boeing in the 1990s. Boeing was facing the question, should we do the planning and all the really initial development, research and development for a class of super jets for the 21st century. I'm talking about massive, huge jets that haul ass on 500 passengers or more. Should we do this? They did a straight NPV analysis and they found out it's negative, very negative. Under traditional ways, the way I'm teaching you, they would have said absolutely not. No, reject. But they didn't. Because what they did was they said, okay, there is a scenario out here in the future where the market will change in a way that might actually happen. Now, if that market does what we think it's going to do, there is a possibility that this big competitor of ours, Airbus, could already be doing planning for it, or there's a possibility that they're not doing planning for it. What would happen if they were planning for it, but we were? Even though it's a small chance that it'll happen that way, or it's not a very big chance it'll happen that way, if we had all the planning in place and we could hit in 2000, 2001 and start to bend metal, as the term is in the airline building industry, if we would be ready to bend metal in this possible scenario, and Airbus had done nothing, we would have their asses. We would have the market to ourselves. Even if they were planning, we would at least share the market with them. We don't know if this is going to happen, though, or not. You see, they were thinking about, by doing what was wrong now, had a negative NPV now, they had an option to do something that would have a massively positive NPV in about 7 years. Boeing decided, yes, even though by traditional methods an NPV is negative, out there there's a possibility that if we were actually did this stupid, expensive, wrong expenditures planning now, we'd be ready to bend metal right on the spot if the market were ready. Turned out that the market
did turn. The super jets really were needed as the hubs consolidated. You had more people at fewer hubs, sure enough, and there was Airbus behind the ball, not ready to bend metal right away. So there was Boeing saying, hey, we could have said no back there because the traditional analysis said negative NPV, forget about it. But we decided that we would go with it anyway, and now we're looking at the NPV out there on bending metal, and it is a huge positive. There's the lesson. Sometimes what looks like a bad idea now turns out to be a great idea later on. That's all I have for you. Thank you.